News. As the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 163rd day, a fresh Israeli airstrike on Deir al-Balah kills at least 12 Palestinians. People across the world continue to display their support for the people in Gaza, urging an immediate ceasefire in the besieged strip. And the Israeli government ends its military cooperation agreement with the U.S., calling the accord illegal.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Over 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, the regime continues pounding the blockaded territory with indiscriminate airstrikes and artillery fire. The health ministry in Gaza says at least 63 people have been killed and 112 others wounded in the latest round of Israeli attacks. At least 12 were killed in an Israeli strike on a residential building in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. According to the ministry, Israel prevents medical teams from reaching victims who are still under the rubble. Meanwhile, Israeli jets continue bombing residential buildings across the coastal strip, including Gaza City. The suffering in Gaza is not limited to just being targeted by bombs. According to UNRWA, malnutrition and famine are striking northern Gaza and is now moving to the southern areas. Since the onset of the Israeli war in early October, over 31,500 Palestinians have been killed, most of them women and children. The head of the World Health Organization calls on Israel not to launch a ground offensive on the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where 1.5 million displaced Palestinians have sought shelter. Tedros Ghebreyesus said the escalation of violence in Rafah would lead to many more deaths and suffering. He called on Israel to refrain from the attack in the name of humanity. Tedros added that people in Rafah are too fragile, hungry, and sick to be moved around. On Friday, the Israeli Prime Minister approved plans to assault Rafah, despite increasing international calls to halt the military operations. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has appointed Mohammed Mustafa as the new Prime Minister of the Palestinian Authority. Mustafa, a U.S.-educated economist and a former senior World Bank official, replaced Mohammed Shataya, who resigned 3 weeks ago, citing the emerging reality in the Gaza Strip. A correspondent from Ramallah has interviewed some of the Palestinians who have described their views about the newly appointed Prime Minister. Let's see what they had to say.
We are all Palestinians and we are the sons of this country. Anyone who will be in charge of the government is supposed to respond to the demands and hopes of the people. So the issue of bringing some politician to impose policies won't be welcomed, because we Palestinians know very well what we want.
For almost 30 years, we've been waiting to have an independent state, but instead, we have only moved from a bad situation to a worse. If we get the chance to have an independent state, then we may witness better circumstances. Otherwise, we don't need any governments, and let's return to the situation before 1987, before the first Intifada. Because literally, we are held in a big prison divided into cantons.
We're really frustrated. We don't expect that there will be any true change. What we are witnessing is a change of the names. There was Dr. Hamdallah, and then Shataya came. But nothing really has changed except for the politicians in charge. I don't think the coming cabinets will be able to rebuild Gaza. It's not easy. We have no trust in any Arab official, whether here or from the Arab countries. Since what happened in Gaza, we have lost hope and confidence in everyone.
To be honest, the majority of people here don't know Mohammed Mustafa, but it's said that he is a man with great capabilities. We hope he'll be able to form a new government and succeed in choosing his ministers. The most important thing for us is to change the current situation in every possible aspect.
We are in a very tragic and very difficult situation, and the tasks that are assigned to the new prime minister are not easy. So if he is not able to mobilize the countries all over the world to stand with us, then people are going to completely lose their trust in the government.
Moving on to news from the occupied West Bank, where the Israeli regime has carried out fresh raids in several Palestinian areas. The regime forces arrested a number of Palestinians during their operations. Mona Kandil joined us earlier from Ramallah for more details on the latest raids.
The Israeli forces this morning had raided the town of Ya'bad, South Jenin, and arrested a Palestinian who had been shot and wounded by the Israeli forces several days ago. The Israeli troops also stormed Nablus and mainly the old town of Nablus. For several hours, exchange of fire had taken place between members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces. Later, the Palestinian Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, the armed wing of Fatah movement, issued a statement saying that their members and their fighters clashed with the Israeli forces, and the members succeeded to detonate explosive devices Israeli military vehicles that stormed the old town of Nablus. In the town of Bitunia, west Ramallah, the Israeli forces stormed this town and they stormed a number of Palestinian homes there, and a number of Palestinians had been detained from Bitunia as well. In Qalqilia, this time the Israelis have stormed the town of Nabi Elias and they set up a military checkpoint, an additional checkpoint at the entrance of Nabi Elias in Qalqilia, and arrested at least one Palestinian when he was passing through the military checkpoint to enter Nabi Elias town. In Hatan, West Beit Lahem, the Israeli forces have also stormed this town, and we have to mention that the Israelis have raided the old town of Al-Khalil, the occupied West Bank, and they arrested four Palestinians, the grandfather, his son, and two of his grandchildren.
The senior leader of the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, says the group is waiting for a response to a ceasefire proposal from Israel and the U.S., the regime's main accomplice in the Gaza genocide. Osama Hamdan said the initiative put forward by Hamas is a realistic one with clear details. He said that it provides for a swap of captives in Gaza and Palestinian abductees and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza. Hamdan said the Palestinian movement had, during negotiations, called for an end to the war, the return of refugees, the dispatch of aid to Gaza, and the start of reconstruction of the Strip. Hamdan touched upon the divisions within the Israeli regime on the war and added that Tel Aviv has achieved none of its declared objectives despite the atrocities committed in Gaza. He said that Hamas has told intermediaries that acts of aggression against Gaza must stop. Israel's systematic torture and abusive treatment of Palestinian prisoners have claimed the life of another inmate. According to Palestinian officials, 26-year-old Juma Abu Ghanima died in an Israeli prison after suffering a serious health condition that required hospitalization. His death brings to 13 the number of prisoners who died in Israeli jails due to torture and medical negligence since October 7. In a statement, Palestinian Prisoners' Society said that Israel has significantly increased its torture and systematic medical negligence against Palestinian detainees in the past months. Israel keeps over 9,000 Palestinians in jails, many of them under the so-called administrative detention. Controversial and internationally condemned policy allows the regime to keep Palestinians behind bars for an indefinite period of time without trial. Thousands of Israelis have once again rallied in Tel Aviv to protest against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over his failure to secure the release of captives in Gaza. Protesters urged Netanyahu to resign and called for holding early elections. They vowed to continue their protests until all captives are released. Netanyahu has been in hot water over his handling of the Gaza war. Israel has so far failed to release any of the captives by military means. It has also failed to achieve any of its stated goals of the war. Israel has been the scene of anti-Netanyahu rallies for months. The Israeli premier is embroiled in a series of scandals. His charges, among others, include fraud and the breach of trust in three cases filed in 2019. People across the world are continuing to display their support for the people in Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocide in the besieged strip. The German capital, Berlin, was the scene of one of the latest such demonstrations.
We We are here to demonstrate for Palestine, and I think it's not only about Palestine here, it's also about showing our anger towards the German media and the German politicians, because they have a lot of power and they decided to take a side. And even they use sometimes some wars for a human crisis or something like this. I can't believe it. I have the feeling that it's just an empty wars.
The protesters demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the liberation of Palestine and the establishment of Al-Quds as its capital. They carried blood-stained small mock body bags in reference to the large number of children killed in Gaza. The protesters also held up pieces of bread to draw attention to the issue of starvation in the besieged strip. Pro-Palestine rallies have been intensifying across Europe, despite attempts by the governments to crack down on the public demos of support. During a rally in the Austrian capital Vienna, thousands took to the streets to slam the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Waving Palestinian flags, the demonstrators gathered at Vienna's city center. The demonstration was part of the Israeli Apartheid Week, called by the BDS movement, which promotes boycotts against Israeli products and multinational companies linked to the regime. Protesters said taking part in the rally was their contribution to solidarity with Gaza. They said the European countries are complicit to Israeli crimes. They also call for an immediate ceasefire and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. A correspondent attended the rally and interviewed some of the demonstrators. Let's see what they had to say.
We are demonstrating here because today is the 160th day of the genocide. They now propose the new idea of bringing relief supplies to Gaza by ship. But I think the real plot is to drive out the people in Gaza by ship again, like 1948. The second thing is that we are here to say that the genocide and the starvation must stop. Aid supplies must be brought in through the land crossings and not by air or ship. The US has the power to demand that from Israel. We are also here to demand an immediate end to the occupation.
I'm here to support a justice cause, which is Palestine, especially during those times where justice is being hijacked by those who control the power. And they misrepresenting what humans should do, how they should support each other, whether in the east, west, north, south, doesn't matter. At this particular time, it's not about west and east, it's about to be with justice, with be with human, and Palestine is not for Palestinians, it's for every human being, it's for everyone who suffers in this world, who feels what's human to be.
I am here because I'm an anti-fascist, and as an anti-fascist, I have to be an anti-Zionist, and I have to stand with the Palestinian resistance for the colonization of Palestine, and we have we are unconditionally solidarity with Palestine and Palestinian solidarity. And if you take seriously the claim to decolonize the world and the global south, you have to stand with Palestine.
I come to these protests because when I was 14 or 15, I had to introduce the topic of the Gaza conflict to my class in school. So before we got any of the kind of propaganda that they do teach in schools here, I got to do my own research, and I did. And I think, like, anyone who does even a half hour of research on the subject, I very quickly kind of recognized the horrors, and ever since then it's been very dear to my heart. And now with everything that's happening, I'm just glad that there are people that are coming every weekend.
Israel's government says it has broken its military cooperation agreement with the United States, calling the accord illegal.
The U.S. presence on the territory of the Republic of Niger is illegal and violates all the constitutional and democratic rules which would require the sovereign people, in particular through its elected representatives, to be consulted on the installation of a foreign army on its territory.
Abramane said the government revoked, with immediate effect, a military accord that allows military personnel and civilian staff from the U.S. Department of Defense on its soil. The declaration came just a day after a senior U.S. delegation left Niger, following a three-day visit to renew contact between the two countries. U.S. relations with Niger faces challenges after a military coup ousted the Western-backed president in the African country last year. However, the U.S. still stations some 1,000 troops in Niger at a desert drone base. Niger has previously severed military ties with its former colonizer, France. It forced French troops in the country to withdraw after nearly a decade. Russians are casting the ballots on the third and final day of presidential election, where President Vladimir Putin is favored to win another term in office. Officials say more than half of the eligible voters have already cast their ballots across Russia's 11 time zones and in online polling stations. This includes online balloting in four Ukrainian regions annexed by Russia in 2022. The voting comes amid ongoing fighting in Ukraine. Putin has used gains on the ground against Ukrainian forces and Russia's economic growth, despite Western sanctions, to cement his popularity. The 71-year-old president has already served seven terms in office and five terms as president. Republican nominee for U.S. President Donald Trump says there will be a, quote, bloodbath if he is not elected to the top job.
Get elected. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. If this election isn't won, I'm not sure that you'll ever have another election in this country. Does that make sense? I don't think you're going to have another election in this country if we don't win this election. I don't think you're going to have another election, or certainly not an election that's meaningful.
Addressing a gathering of GOP supporters in Ohio, Trump urged voters to vote for him in the November presidential elections and called himself a friend of the American taxpayers. Trump lashed out at his Democratic rival and incumbent President Joe Biden, saying that he has destroyed the country's economy. He said that Americans will not enjoy proper Social Security, medical, and other welfare services with Biden in office. Campaigning has intensified in recent weeks in the U.S., with Trump and Biden attacking each other's record and character. The incumbent president and his aides have described Trump as a threat to democracy. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of life.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 17th, 2024. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So, please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. This is another edition of Listeners Special, and here we are with you with many reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of the names that have sent us reception reports, which include Rob den Boer from the Netherlands, Tarek from Bangladesh, and Thomas Mobius from Germany. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our engineers and technicians. You know why? Because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service for our listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in reception reports will be receiving QSL card from us. So, Rob den Boer, Thomas and Tarek, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And from Pakistan, we've received an email from Malik Allah Bachaya Khokkar. And from Pakistan, we've received an email from Rafiullah Mandukhail. And from Germany, we've received an email from Thomas Mobius, which later during the program, I will read your great emails from around the world. Stay with us, please. Nature has always been inspiring for humans. For example, airplanes were inspired by the natural flying abilities of birds and bats. On the other hand, there is a group of people who have a mystic view toward the natural scenery, which they reflect them in their poems or literary pieces. Personally speaking, among the natural sciences, waterfall has always been attractive to many people, especially me. Just imagine roaring water flowing over a vertical drop or a series of steep drops and then at the end finding peace and calm. Great. I find it inspiring because in life we find peace and calm after going through hardships and ups and downs. Oh, it's a little philosophical, I know. Anyway, today I'm going to talk about the tallest stair-like waterfall in the West Asia region, Piran Waterfall, which is located in Kermanshah province, Western Iran. Stay with us, please. I will talk about Piran Waterfall more. Welcome back. Before I read an email from Pakistan from Malik Allah Bachaya, I just wanted to talk about Piran Waterfall a little more. As you may know, Piran Waterfall is located in Sarpol-e-Zahab County, Kermanshah province in western Iran. This waterfall is one of the tallest waterfalls of Iran, which flows on a high wall and shows a very unique view. Piran Waterfall is a three-floor waterfall, with its two upper floors being very tall and the lower floor, which is shorter. The third floor of the waterfall is located below the trees and is not visible from above. The total height of the cascade from the top of the cliffs to the lowest point of the third floor is about 150 meters, and that's great. Okay, let's see what Malik Allah Bachaya from Pakistan says. He says, for over a century, radio has been an essential source of information, entertainment, and companionship. From the crackling broadcast of yesteryears to the crystal clear transmissions of today, its evolution mirrors our own journey through time. Yet, amidst the digital revolution, radio persists as a beacon of accessibility. Its simplicity transcends socioeconomic barriers, reaching remote villages and bustling cities alike. In regions where internet penetration is limited, radio remains a lifeline, delivering vital news, educational content, and cultural programs. Moreover, radio serves as a catalyst for change. It amplifies diverse voices, empowering marginalized communities to share their stories and advocate for their rights. Through citizen journalism and grassroots initiatives, radio galvanizes social movements and catalyzes progress. Let us reaffirm our commitment to this enduring medium. Let us recognize its power to inform, unite, and inspire. In an increasingly interconnected world, radio remains a testament to the enduring power of voice. Regards. First of all, salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Malik Allah Puchaya from Pakistan, and many thanks for writing to us. Your description of radio was perfect, I think. Appreciations to you for that. So please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. Malik Allah Puchaya from Pakistan, please write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English radio programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. So, I was talking about Piran Waterfall, which is located in Sarpol Zahab County, Kermanshah Province in western Iran. And as I said, this waterfall is one of the tallest waterfalls of Iran and is the tallest waterfall in West Asia region. The flora of this place is also unique. You may not believe. There is clean air, pure oxygen. And what a good feeling we could have in that place. I wish you could visit Piran Waterfall and the regions around it. And, you have to go to the bottom of the waterfall and enjoy the unique sound of the water, which is flowing from above. The region around the waterfall is also very stunning and so relaxing. It looks like paradise with a stir-like waterfall. Yes, it is. There are several routes to reach this waterfall, but remember one thing, dear listeners. Be there in Piran Waterfall before the month of October, since after this time, after the month of October, it gets very cold in that place, and reaching this point becomes very difficult. So please be there around the region in Waterfall, Piran Waterfall, just before the month of October, because it becomes very cold and reaching the point becomes very difficult. And you have to keep in mind that in order to visit the mountain that the Piran waterfall flows from, you should be at the bottom of it, because the waterfall from above is not visible since the flora is thick. Great. And let's see what our listener from Germany says. Thomas Mobius from Germany, who is one of our regular listeners, says, "My name is Thomas Mobius and I'm writing to you from Germany. I received your program a few days ago. If it's possible, I would like to receive a QSL card. Many thanks and best regards from Germany." First of all, salam and warm greetings from Iran. I'm grateful to you for this email, Thomas Mobius from Germany. Of course, an EQSL or electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Welcome back. Let's see what our listener from Pakistan says. Rafiullah Mando Khail from Pakistan says, hello, IRIB team. Hope you're doing good. I am a journalist by profession at the moment, but literally, I have remained an international radio listener for almost 2 decades. Your radio team should feel proud of the excellent job you do. Keep up the noble job. I'm interested in the rich history, diverse culture, multicolored traditions, and lifestyle of the indigenous communities in your country. I belong to a remote and hilly part of the country where people have little access to internet, so I prefer to post mail rather than an email, as I rarely check my emails due to non-availability of the internet facility. I humbly request you, please send me books, magazines, year planners and diary, etc. via post mail for my media office and library as well. I will be waiting anxiously to receive your valuable gifts. I will keep in touch with you in future. Regards. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Rafiullah Mandokhil from Pakistan. Many thanks for writing to us, and many thanks for your compliments, your support, and your commitment to IRIB English Radio. And we're so happy to hear that you like our programs, as you described our radio team, an excellent team, and you said that our radio team should feel proud of the excellent jobs we do. And you said, keep up the noble job. Thank you for your compliments. And it's good to hear that you are interested in Iran, its diverse culture, multicolored traditions, and their rich history and the lifestyle of the indigenous communities in Iran. Thank you for your compliments. We welcome your views about our programs, Rafiullah from Pakistan. Many thanks for writing to us. Of course, an electronic QSL will be sent to you. For the time being, please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as confirmation to this email. Maybe in the future, we could be able to send you the mails as you've requested. Anyway, many thanks for writing to us. Write to Asunta and tell us your views about our programs. Appreciations to you again. Welcome back, and in this edition of Listeners Special, we talked about Piran Waterfall, which is located in western Iran in Kermanshah province. And Iran is the land of wonders and beauties, as I'll always say. But we have come to the end of this edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special program. But before saying goodbye, I just wanted to send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, including Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, Tarek from Bangladesh, Thomas Mobius from Germany, Malik Alapachayo from Pakistan, Thomas Mobius from Germany, and Rafiullah Mandokhil from Pakistan. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Monlay.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to The Spotlight. In this edition, a statement on Thursday, Hamas announced that it had put forth a new proposal for a ceasefire that also includes a prisoner swap deal. But while Gaza is looking for ways to end the war, word is out that Netanyahu has approved attacking Rafah, a city in Gaza that was expected to be a safe place for displaced Palestinians. In this edition of Spotlight, we will be discussing the dire situation in the besieged coastal strip and Israel's true intentions in continuing the war. Our guests in this edition are Masoud Shajadi, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us live from London, and also Seb Shah, the author of West Asia and an expert joining us from Belfast. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen. Let's begin with Mr. Masoud Shajadi. Mr. Shajadi, we have just heard that Netanyahu has approved attacking Rafah. Now, this is a city that from the very beginning was deemed to be a safe place for displaced Palestinians. That is according to Israeli sources themselves. Why is this happening now at this point in time when Hamas is putting forth a ceasefire deal, a prisoner swap deal, and is looking for ways to end the war?
Well, it's very clear that Israel, Zionist state, from the outset was set to exclude Palestinians from that land, ethnic cleanse them, and by any means possible, and grab as much land as possible. But this particular government, in particular, it actually been committed to ethnic cleansing and genocide long before 7th of October, to the extent that there has been even conflict internally in this regime because of this policy. This particular government is committed to that. So we'll use any possible avenue, any possible opportunity to kill as many Palestinians, kill as many children, kill as many women. And in their eyes, the children of Gaza are the future Palestinians, and they need to be eradicated. They need to be killed. And this is why the policy since the 7th of October, which has been unleashed, it shows very clearly that they are targeting innocent civilians with a brutality, without any mercy, in front of TV cameras. And while the international community is watching, and at worst, United States and Western allies are equipping this Zionist state to kill most effectively, most brutally, and most systematically. This is not what is happening right now. The fact that Netanyahu wants to use this opportunity to kill as many people, innocent people, as many Palestinians, and ethnically cleanse the Gaza, is not a surprise. And it's not a new policy. It's been their policy, and they are pursuing it so openly and so publicly. And I think we need to wake up to this reality. Otherwise, this is going to go on and on. And you know, international community is just doing nothing and wishing for a change of policy, which is not going to happen without enough pressure being put on the Zionist state.
Well, Mr. Shajar, you raised some very important issues right there, but I would like to rewind what you said and go back to a part which is very important. You said all of this is happening in front of TV cameras and the international community is watching. So let's bring in our guest from Belfast, Mr. Sha'at. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name correctly. I hope that I do. But Israel is committing war crimes, crimes that have been defined by international law as war crimes. Israel has completely neglected what is known to be as the Geneva Convention, or what the ICRC itself claims to be rules for war. So what do you think the intention of Israel is by so openly neglecting everything that modern human beings believe to be the pillars of the modern society?
Let me just grasp the last statement you said. This modern civilized society which you're talking about, it's all fake and hypocrisy. It used to be used just by the West when they want to intimidate a country or impose sanction or just get their interest through. And the international law and international community and international organizations being formed after the Second World War, like the United Nations and these bodies, and Geneva even convention and the special, the fourth article of it, and that it's all proven. Gaza is proved all of that was fake and it was just hypocrisy. Since the United States of America, as they claim the leaders of the free world, which means the Western camp, they themselves who showed us in Gaza, they pretend with this Zionist entity as their outpost, military post in there. And I want to say it's their banana republic in the middle of West Asia, which is the Zionists try to deny that, like Ben-Gvir when he said we are not a banana republic to the Americans. They are a banana republic in there, and they, without the support of the United States, without the money, without the funding, without the arms, they would disappear in weeks. And this is one point. The United States of America, who can open the land routes from Rafah or Kerb Abu Salem to bring the miles upon miles from aid waiting in the borders of Rafah, can do it with one phone call to order, not to ask Netanyahu. And they would obey because they know without the United States of America, they can't. But Biden said there is no red line when he was talking about for Netanyahu, for the Israelis, means they can do whatever they want, and the United States of America can ask, pretend like they care for the Palestinians. Once they start this airdrops of aid, which is landed on top of people and killed seven at some stage, the United States of America drop a few parcels of aid on Gaza on this hand, and on the other hand, tons upon tons of ammunition going to the Zionist entity, supplying it. The same goes for the British, for the Germans, for the French, for Australia, for Canada. All these Western camps is becoming disgusted because they are involved in they are complicit in genocide now. If we can hear the rulings of the International Court about asking Israel to follow 1, 2, 3 steps and sub and provide this report, and as well to take steps not to put the Palestinians' lives in harm way, and to allow the aid in, and telling the governments who supply the Zionist entity with a lot of with cash and with the ammunition and with that are complicit with it. This is clear, but none listen. Since the Zionist entity, they think they are shielded by this Western diplomatic shield from any organization to impose on it anything. We witnessed the United States of America use 3 vetoes against the ceasefire in Gaza to save the people in Gaza. They can 30% of the children in Gaza malnutrition now, and a lot of them dying from hunger and starvation. And we can see the roundabout of Kuwaiti roundabout in Western Gaza become the call nickname the flower massacres, since people go gather there waiting for any trucks to get them any kind of aid or flour to get to their starving children. The rest of their life, a lot of them knows they can't go there and will not coming back since, but they have to do something for their kids. And this is all done at the watch of the United States of America.
Exactly. It's all happening under the watch of the U.S. And also, Mr. Shajare, the U.S. also did some kind of what I would like to call a propaganda move to send some aid that at best can be described as a drop in the bucket, something that could only make some headlines for just a few days, sending some kind of meager amount of aid to Gaza, while it is supporting Israel by sending tons of weapons, all kinds of weapons that Israel needs, let alone, as our guest in Belfast just mentioned, all the support that it gives to the Zionist entity in the United Nations by vetoing any attempt for a ceasefire.
It really is outrageous. It is outrageous that this level of killing and brutality, it goes on. It's outrageous that no attempt is being made to stop it. And indeed, there is a veto taking place to make sure that it will not stop. There is a political cover for this Zionist state by United States and its Western allies to make sure that the killing will continue with its brutality and with its totality. And indeed, arms are being poured in free of charge. They're not even being, they're not even being sold to kill innocent people. Everybody knows what's going on. And indeed, let us not forget that the corridor for aid to go into Israel, to go to this Zionist state and feed not just the Zionists, but feed the war machine, is going through Saudi Arabia, Emirates, and Jordan. And, oil is going through Turkey. This is outrageous. It's outrageous because it's happening in front of the world population. We are seeing it day in, day out. I'm sick and tired of actually seeing this. I'm sick and tired of seeing myself and my family crying their eyes out in this month of Ramadan for human beings being treated in that way. And at the same time, United States claim to be champion of democracy, champion of human rights, champion of standing for the weak ones around the world. And this is outrageous. It has to stop. Where is the democracy? 70 to 80% of Western nations' population is asking for ceasefire now, right now. And, these criminals who are in power, be it in Britain, France, Germany, or United States, are indeed ignoring their own people. And then they claim that this is a democracy. I think what is now it's very clear that all the institutions that have been set up to stop these sort of brutal war crimes, be it United States, international courts, and so forth, are not fit for purpose. And we need to bring a change. And we need to bring a change not just in these international institutions, but citizens in Britain, France, Germany, and United States need to ask themselves, do they want this direction of going towards sort of jungle, law of jungle, people killing each other and being allowed to commit genocide in such an open way, or they are responsible to bring an end to it? And, they will put more effort. Already I take my hat out to people in Britain, France, Germany, and others who are coming out in demonstrations day in, day out. But it needs to go far beyond demonstrations. We need to sort of say enough is enough. And I think we need to demand that there has to be some justice prevailing at this 11th hour.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Shajara, and these grassroots campaigns have proven to be successful in inflicting heavy losses on corporations that support Israel. We've had McDonald's and also Starbucks announcing heavy losses. So, Mr. Shath, could you please tell us, in your opinion, could the same grassroots campaigns puts the same amount of pressure on their governments, who are clearly, against their people's will, are still supporting Israel?
I just came today from a massive demonstration in Belfast. I addressed it in front of the American consulate, and the people are outraged, and outraged at their own local politicians. In Ireland, they are outraged at the Irish Prime Minister and Irish leaders of the biggest political parties going in St. Patrick's Day, which is the Irish National Day, to hand a shamrock to Joe Biden. And they say, you know, like, you don't go and shake hands with genocidal Joe. And the people are disgusted with their leadership, with their political parties, often trying to implicit their political parties in supporting genocide by going and sitting with Joe Biden. That limit, it's a massive call for them to turn away from doing that. But tomorrow, the whole thing will be, so I don't think, the United States of America, Even in the Congress, they issued a bill for banning or taking over Tuk Tuk, because they think it is a lot of the youngs are getting their news from there, not from the mainstream media, because of Palestine, because of the what's going on in Palestine. They want only the lies comes from the Fox News or CNN or BBC to trickle to the people. They want to control them and make them sheep people. They don't understand the people are educated and they can think and make decisions for themselves. They don't want to keep bombarding them with lies, since studies says there is 80% of the people who read the news, they don't go to find out was it right or wrong to analyze. So they depend on that. And there is a huge industry in the Zionist entity in fake news and telling lies. Since that entity itself was based on lies, religious lies, national lies, ethnic groups lies, everything about that entity and its leadership, the Zionist entity, is lies. And the United States of America, I want to say to my friend, which pretending the leader of the free world and supposed to defend the, as you said, Mr. Shajri, the weak, they are not. And you know, and I know, they're the one who committed genocide after genocide in Vietnam. They're the one who killed the First Nation in America. They annihilated them. They're the one who destroyed a lot of countries in Latin America. They're the one who killed nearly 2 million Iraqis in Iraq under a couple of lies, which is proved weapons of mass destruction and stuff like that, and is still stagnating the Iraqi economy and looting everything in there. They're the one who went in Syria under the cover of they want to fight Daesh, which they created, and they're looting the oil and the gas from Syria and destroying the country. They're the one who want to make sure the Zionist entity destroy Gaza and crying to Netanyahu, like they killing them softly, gently, as Biden said. It's disgusting, and it's about time. I agree with you, brother. The new order supposed to be emerging and learning, because Gaza exposed them all.
So, Mr. Shajara, in your opinion, how much power do these grassroots campaigns have, and can they put enough pressure on the governments? Or let's say, how far would these governments dare to go?
Well, I think what very clear that these governments, they have now morality, they're morally bankrupt, ideologically bankrupt, And, you know, when it comes to law and order, they're bankrupt. But never before, until now, they were exposed the way that they're exposed now. It's true what happened in Vietnam. It's true all the things that the brother is highlighting. But it's really just now that masses in West are waking up to these realities. And I think this is the beginning of the end of the influence of these politicians. These politicians have to be punished when it comes to the election. They don't fear anything else. They have no morality. They've got no common sense or dignity. They need to be punished on the ballot paper. And indeed, I think that's going to happen. And indeed, I think this, what we are seeing, this mass awakening that we are seeing right across Western world, be it United States, France, Germany, etc., etc., despite the fact that they are using dictatorial policies to stop these demonstrations, to legislate to stop this demonstration, and to stop the voice of those who are standing up for justice and saying never again. But nevertheless, it's growing. It's growing by minute. It's growing by day. It's growing every month. And so I would, my response to your question is that this is not the end, but this is the beginning of the end of this sort of politics being used to con not just people in Western Asia and around the world, but conning their own citizens. And this awakening is going to matter, and its strength is becoming more powerful day by day.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Shajara. And just as Mr. Shath just mentioned, he has come back from a mass demonstration in Ireland. We have been seeing pro-Palestine demonstrations in countries that we would never imagine. And Mr. Shath, in your opinion, how far do you think these demonstrations can go? And we also live in the day and age of social media. So how do you think social media can also increase solidarity with the Palestinians and in order to bring a change?
In Ireland, there is similarities because they suffered colonial and they suffered the same thing. So there is a connection in the struggle. But as well, social media influencing big time, since the people get their news straight from the source. Sometimes they get it even in Arabic from someone who's been his house or her house attacked, and they see the images and they see the starvation and they see the effect of it, and they cannot see any of that being even displayed on their own mainstream media. And one of the other things in here, which is I've been witnessing since from last November till now, the respect these demonstrations showing for the Lebanese resistant and mainly for the Yemeni resistant. It's amazing to see that and see how the people are proud to see there is a noble movement like the Yemenis and the Lebanese resistant or the Iraqi resistant coming to support the Palestinians, as they compare that to what Che Guevara done in the late 60s in Africa, in supporting the African against the apartheid and trying to fight. So there is a movement growing to dismantle. One of the slogans they say, you have to dismantle this Zionist entity out of and take it out of this region. A lot of the youngsters, Jewish even voices, start to say in that as well. So this has become a grassroots movement which will influence everything. And the first result you can see of that, the election of the Honorable George Galloway as a member of the parliament in Britain, he came to the platform on for Gaza and was elected for that. And this movement will become bigger and bigger and bigger, and it will change a lot of the ruling elite. You're not going to see their faces again in offices. I hope so.